Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Today we meet the presenter of a two-part documentary for TG Cahir that looks closely at the lockdown to see how wildlife has benefited.
The lockdown had positive impact for certain species, and potentially one of those species was the little tern on Garrogue Beag. Agus mar luish toshe and curfui kilcool and shinna kilvantain, like kilcool on the beach, on the shingle beach in County Wicklow.
It's the beginning of the nesting season, and Niall Hatch talks to me about the construction of bird nests.
When birds build their nests, most nests are rigid structures made of sticks and twigs sort of woven together. So by lining the inside of their nest with things like moss or with some other species, they use feathers, and some birds like thrushes use mud to do that. It's about improving the insulation inside the nest and giving that soft cushion for the eggs and for the chicks when they hatch out. So that's what it was doing.
And we meet the 12 finalists in the RTE Eye on Nature Wildlife Photography Competition.
The photo I took was of a fluffy white seal pup sitting in front of some dark rocks down on the Salty Islands. We had headed down for the day last September, myself and some friends from the Selbridge Camera Club. The photo that I took, I'd been sitting kind of watching some seals. This one in particular was playing with some seaweed for a while by himself, and then he spotted me and kind of curiously shuffled over towards me, so it let me take this picture that I entered where he was looking straight into the camera, which was nice.
Yes, we've come a long way since I first approached our colleagues at the Today Show on RTE Television, and I said, I have an idea for a wildlife photography competition that I think is going to do really well. We have noticed, I said to them, during the lockdown, a huge increase in the number of pictures of wildlife being sent to Mooney Goes Wild. And I said, if we join forces, who knows what could happen? Well, here we are, 7 months and over 7,000 entries later, ready to announce the 12 finalists in the RTE Eye on Nature Wildlife Photographic Competition at the National Botanic Gardens. Music is over the top, they said, Derek. I said, no, it's not. After all, this is the creme de la creme of our viewers' and listeners' pictures of Irish wildlife. A snapshot in time. From over 7,000 down to the final 12. Not a job I would have liked myself, hence the reason I wasn't a judge. But we had three suitably qualified and passionate wildlife lovers as our judges. We had Dr. Matthew Jebb, Director of the National Botanic Gardens of Ireland in Glasnevin. Niall Hatch, Public Relations and Development Officer with Birdwatch Ireland, and our professional photographer based in Scullin, County Cork, where she has her own gallery, Sheena Jolly. And it's to Sheena I will turn first. Sheena, can I have your thoughts, please?
Well, do you know, it was really great to see the Irish wildlife highlighted, and it was represented by a great cross-section, including the mammals, the birds, the invertebrates. There were some really good images, but the first selection eliminated were those that really weren't in focus, or where there was a shallow depth of field and the eyes weren't in focus, or the image was blurred. Then we're looking at composition again, some really fine images, but let down by the subject not being placed well in the image. It's important to remember that an image is more aesthetic if the focal point is placed in the strongest area of the frame, which really typically addresses that rule of thirds.
Where would you put the subject?
Okay. An image is typically obeys the rule of thirds. In other words, if you have a horizon, it might be on the top third or the bottom third, in a point away from the centre, basically, and looking maybe into the space of the rest of the image.
Did it matter to you if it was a professional photographer or an amateur photographer, or did you know?
I can't say I knew. Yes, you could tell if an image was badly taken, or was, maybe it was taken with a phone, or there was a lot of noise in the image, so that would let it down. You could tell when some people were better than others. That doesn't mean they're professional. They could be a good amateur. So, you know, by entering competitions, people really learn a lot about their own image and how to improve. So there were some images, for example, that had a cluttered background that was distracting, such as maybe a branch passing up behind a bird. You know, if that same person took that image again, they'd probably move to avoid that background. Generally, what we found was dark objects in the background to prove to be less distracting than light objects.
Now, I don't wish to cast aspersions on any of our entrants, but Sheena, do you think any of the photographs were doctored?
No, I didn't see that. Maybe there were some that were showing a lot of pixelations, but if anything, they weren't doctored enough. For example, and I'm talking about composition, because there were some images that were really great images, but if only they'd been cropped a little bit, maybe to push the focal point into the corner, you know, more towards the frame, the edge of the frame, that would have improved the image. And they fell down on, in the final selection.
There were over 7,000 entries to this competition. It must have been extraordinarily hard to get it down to the top 12. Oh, dear, I wouldn't have liked that job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, do you know what? The final selection was really difficult. I'm sure Niall will agree. And there was much debate. The wow factor was an emotional response, but then we had to look at technical excellence as well.
Do you concur, Niall?
I absolutely do. It really was a difficult decision. So with Sheena, Matthew and I spent a lot of time going over the photographs. There was lots of heated debate and score sheets. We were scrupulously fair about it. We wanted to make sure that we were looking at all the positive points and negative points of each photograph, balancing them against each other. What I think was really interesting as well was the determination as to which were the best photographs or our preferred ones had nothing to do with the rarity of the subject. So what I love about the final shortlist is that there are some rare species there. There's some very common familiar species there. What really mattered was the photograph itself and the story that it told. There had to be some sort of an emotional connection, and it had to show something that we wouldn't normally see. And that was difficult because there were so many entries that were absolutely brilliant. There's no getting away from that. And of course, when it comes to wildlife photography, you can put all the groundwork in and preparation pays off, and certainly making sure that you know what you're doing with your camera and composing the image right will work. But if the subject doesn't cooperate, then it'll ruin the photograph. And that's the hard part, because there's always a variable there that the photographer can't control. And so we were mindful of that. And the very best photographs were the ones that really, really spoke to us, where the, you know, things as well, where the eye of the creature is in focus. That's very important. And you know, even little things like when you're photographing an animal and you have that sort of spark of light, that catch light in the eye, it does make a big, big difference. You know, if the eye is out of focus or slightly blurred, it really does break the photograph or the spell, the magic that a photograph can create, I think. Also, as Sheena said, sometimes there'll be a perfect photograph, except it was just slightly obscured by a branch or a leaf or something like that. And there were several photographs where we were looking at them and thinking, oh, if only the person had just shifted the camera slightly or had just cropped it a little more carefully, this would have been an even better image. So it was coming down to really splitting hairs towards the end, because the quality of the final ones are so good that we really came down to those technical points and that expertise that really sets a good photograph apart, I think.
Is it true that you didn't know the names or the sexes of any of the photographers?
Oh, that's
absolutely
quite true.
Absolutely, 100%.
No, it would have been terrible if we'd known any of those photographers.
Yes, Derek, that was a very important part of it. So the judging was completely anonymous. We were just sent numbered photographs without any name or even the name of the species on them so that we could judge them, well, blind, at least in terms of who took them. We could obviously see what the photographs looked like. So that was very important, because we had no idea if they were amateur or professional. We had no idea how much experience they had. We had no idea if they'd been published elsewhere, if they were well known for winning wildlife photographic competitions, or if it was the first time they'd ever entered. It came purely down to the image itself. And I found that even though with some of the well-known nature photographers in Ireland, I would know quite a bit about their styles, even so, I wasn't able to tell who the photographs were by. And that was a very important part. We can't have any kind of bias when we're judging these. So it was just done on the basis of spreadsheets, with each photograph having a numbered code. And that's how we would refer to them and refer back to people in RTE when we said we'd like more information about this photograph, because that was important too. We need to make sure that the photographs genuinely were taken in Ireland and that they were taken in accordance with the rules of the competition. There were certainly some entries that came in where we could see that the photographs weren't taken in Ireland or were taken of non-Irish species, perhaps in captivity. That was important as well because, you know, with the best will in the world, even if the photograph was technically perfect, if it didn't obey the rules and it wasn't taken in Ireland in the proper period of time showing real wildlife, then it didn't qualify. So that was vital.
What was interesting as a judge was it was really lovely to cooperate with each other and discuss an image and bring an image up or bring an image down. I thought the whole judging process went very well.
I have a thought in my mind, which I'll throw out there to the listeners and to you two guys. And as you're closest to me on the airwaves, you can answer this question. Niall, we talk a lot about citizen scientists on this programme, people getting involved and making their contribution. It doesn't matter how small it may be. It may even be just a record of birds that appear in their garden, as is the case with your garden bird survey every year. Taking photographs is a document of a particular species in this place at that time. That's citizen science, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. I think we can all be citizen scientists, and photographs play an important role of that because it's obviously a record that a particular plant or animal was present at a particular time at a particular location. But not only that, it serves a great benefit to conservation as well, because look at it, with the Eye on Nature photographic competition, birds and mammals and plants and insects, they're all in the media at the moment. People are talking about the photographs and how to get the best image. It's on, you know, the front page of the RTÉ website at the moment. That's absolutely fantastic. The more people that learn to appreciate wildlife and see how important it is, the more people will then fight for conservation and will want to protect these species for future generations. And I know it's a bit of a cliche to say that that a picture is worth a thousand words, but it is in this case. You know, you could listen to me prattle on for an hour about how important it is to save wildlife, but if you can show just one or two photographs showing the value of them, how engaging these creatures are, how important they are, that's really, really vital. And of course, the fact is that some of the species that are photographed in this competition that might be common today, well, tomorrow they may not be. You know, there's many cases where creatures have been photographed and they were thought to be common, and then all of a sudden they disappear and all that's left of them are those photographs. So that's something that's always in my mind as well. Nature is constantly shifting. We humans are having a big effect on our planet and on the flora and fauna of our whole world. And who knows, maybe in future generations, people might look back at some of these photographs and think, wow, that used to be common. That's something they were able to photograph. I would give anything to be able to see that, but now it's gone. So I think that there is a very powerful message there with photographs.
I think, too, that's why this competition is so important. It's really highlighted Irish wildlife. I hope it's brought people closer to nature and made people more observant, and also given them a desire to actually find out more about our animals, our mammals, our birds, our invertebrates. So it's got a win-win factor. And by doing that, I think, like Niall said, it's going to help people conserve our wildlife.
Well, I can only thank you both very much indeed from the bottom of my heart. Sheena, thank you as our professional photographer. You've got your own gallery in Skull, isn't it, in County Cork?
I do indeed, yes. Not very active at the minute, but it's a good summer and I hope people will be able to come back in the next summer.
But are you working online?
Not really. People like to come to the gallery. It's an experience. I think they like to hear about how the images are shot and where they're shot, and the images speak to them actually as well. You know, if they find a connection with the image and that, I think, then they want to buy it. It's more about coming to the gallery.
Is it all wildlife?
Some landscape, not too many. You know, I have to carry my cameras and the big lenses, so it's easier to carry one camera and one big lens than, and also I don't particularly like to change the lenses, so I'm so passionate about capturing the wildlife that it tends to be wildlife, not landscape.
Now, this may seem like a rather rude question, where's Kenneth Williams when you need him? But can a boy or a girl, if they were so inclined, make a living from wildlife photography in Ireland? And you don't have to answer that numerically.
Oh, that's a tough one.
I know.
The answer is yes.
I hope so.
You know, I had a gallery in Kinsale and it was during time of recession. My turnover was amazing. That was 2010. I have to say last year was great for me.
Oh, good.
You know, if I was better on line sales, I'm not. I'm not interested so much in doing that. But as a gallery, I have to say it's been pretty good. Yeah.
Well, I hope to pop in as soon as the lockdown restrictions are eased. in the next few months. But I'd love to pop in and we should go down and have a chat with you from the gallery. And we really do appreciate your professionalism and your input into this project, because we couldn't do it without you guys. Our three judges, yourself, Dr. Matthew Jebb at the National Botanic Gardens. We're going to be hearing from Matthew. I recorded a piece with him during the week. And to you, Niall, with your Birdwatch Ireland hat on, and people hear you on the radio programme as a regular panellist now on Mooney Goes Wild, but you're also the Public Relations and Development Officer with Birdwatch Ireland.
That's right. And it's been very interesting for us to see, since COVID became a ruling factor in all of our lives, to see how many people have switched to nature, how people seek comfort in it, seek entertainment in it. Yeah. I think that's very much been reflected in the number of entries to this competition. Nature has become more important to us than ever before. Or what I would say, actually, we've realised it's more important than ever before. It's always been important. We've just never really perhaps valued it the way that we should. So for a conservation organisation like Birdwatch Ireland to see this level of interest in birds and in other wildlife is really heartening. And we hope that continues. We hope that when life does return to normal, people won't forget about the wildlife. We still need it and it needs us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're being really proactive too, Niall, you know, with your connections with conservation for the curlew and the corncrake. I think Birdwatch Ireland does great work.
Absolutely, and they're to be commended for everything they do. So, Sheena, thank you very much indeed. Very nice to speak with you again, and we'll talk to you soon. Niall, if you wouldn't mind hanging on, I have a few more questions for you, and I'll come back to them a little bit later on. It's about the nesting season. But first, let's pay a visit now to the Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin, where I caught up with Dr. Matthew Jebb. Matthew was the third of our judges, but the organisation Matthew works for, the Office of Public Works, are our main sponsors. So we'll be hearing from the 12 finalists very shortly, talking about their pictures. But what can you expect to see if tomorrow you go into the Botanic Gardens? Well, here's Matthew to tell you all about it.
Yes, Derek, who would have thought we would have got a response as big as that? It has been, very difficult to look at all those entries and choose from amongst them. And it would have been great to have put 1,000 or 2,000 images up. But, space is limited and we can't go to that sort of extreme. But the 12 we have picked, I think, represent an incredible range, the sheer range of beauty to be seen. I was talking to someone, we're just putting them up now, and someone was saying to me, is that bird something you find in Ireland? And I said, yes, it is. But that person had never seen it before.
Oh.
So you'll come here and you will see birds that you may never have seen in real life. But it's been like looking at a National Geographic that no one else has seen yet, because all of these images have been hidden from the public up until the opening day.
Yeah, and it's a good positive reflection on how people view nature, is it not?
And it was pure chance, because the judges had no idea who the photographers were or where these photographs were taken until we had made our final selection.
Oh, really?
And once it was revealed where the pictures were taken, we were amazed at how evenly distributed they are right across the island.
Oh, okay. And so all you had was a serial number sort of thing, was it?
Literally that. There were numbers. So we were looking at 5174 and 23 and 680. And that's the best way to do it. It was great fun for the judges because, again, we were seeing shots that were fantastic. Individually, we would say, wow, I've never seen such an amazing photograph as that. Or the technical skill sometimes that's come down to getting that photograph, as well as the patience of sitting quietly for a very timid creature, a shy creature, to come out and show itself and then catch that instant of where it is just right against the background.
So it's kind of right time, right place.
It's all that, but it's also, how you crop your picture, how you have adjusted the exposure, got the colours right. So there is so much chance involved, and it is down to patience and a real love for your subject matter.
Okay, so if people come to the Botanic Gardens tomorrow, what can they expect to see? Can you give them an indication of where they'll find it and where it is and all that kind of stuff? And remember, we're still locked down.
Yes, people have to remember that they can only travel to the gardens if you're within 5 kilometres. But they're easily found in the gardens. They're in a wonderful big pergola. They're well spaced. They're large. We've printed them up sort of 4 foot by 6 foot. So they're substantial images. You can stand well back and enjoy them. And so I hope that being out of doors, space like that, we didn't know what the level of lockdown might be when we launched this competition. And although we're sitting at the highest level, there is the opportunity to see it in relative safety. But I would also warn people that if we get very crowded here in the gardens, we are operating a temporary closing system. We will let people in as others come out, because we need to be very mindful of the capacity of the gardens.
Because you had something like 600,000 visitors last year?
That's right, we get a tremendous number. And right now, you know, even on weekdays, we can be absolutely overrun here, because we are a wonderful sanctuary for a lot of the locals here to actually stretch their legs in peace and quiet away from the traffic. Pavements feel very crowded nowadays with the number of people out walking them. And so somewhere like the gardens is a wonderful respite. And the OPW, you know, has been very proud to have kept nearly all of its sites fully open so that people can exercise and get a bit of relief.
So from tomorrow, this exhibition will be here for people to see if they stroll into the Botanic Gardens. But remember, you must be within your 5 kilometre restrictions. And if the government changes that, you must adhere to whatever restrictions are put in place after this week or whenever it's going to be. But I just want to remind people that you can also go online to rte.ie/eyeonnature and you'll see the 12 finalists, or just visit the Mooney Goes Wild website, rte.ie/Mooney. Matthew, I have to thank you, because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be able to do this competition. And if it wasn't for the OPW, we wouldn't be able to stage it here at the National Botanic Garden. So thank you, and to all of your colleagues and to your organisation for helping us out.
No, it's been a wonderful collaboration, and here's to many future competitions.
And to remind people, the winner will be announced on the Today Show on RTE One Television on Wednesday. That's in 2 days' time, St. Patrick's Day. So even though you may be indoors, we're going to bring you outdoors to the National Botanic Gardens. Can I just ask you finally before you go, Matthew, did you all agree?
It was astonishing. We had our sort of silent votes, because we all submitted our votes. We added them up and we thought, gosh, yeah, that is impressive. Of course, there was a lot of debate. There was a lot of arguments. People would champion a picture, and sometimes we pushed up the points, and sometimes we would take another look. So I think it was a very fair process, a very rigorous process, and it was a very large number of pictures we had to go through. But nobody was rejected. There are thousands of images that could have been on display, and you know, that's an important point to make, that I hope, you know, people do not feel that not reaching the top 12 out of 7,500 is anything to be sad about. Have another go next year. There is a lot of time and a lot of subject matter to look at between now and then.
I couldn't agree more with Matthew Jebb. He's absolutely right. Try again next year. What was it that Beckett said? Ever tried, ever failed, no matter. Try again, fail better. Never give up, okay? Details on the website, rte.ie/Mooney, for the online gallery if you're not permitted to travel to the Botanic Gardens to see the display of the 12 finalists in the inaugural RTE Eye on Nature competition. Speaking of which, would you like to meet them now? Yes, you would. Great. Let's start, in no particular order, with the first 6. Here we go. Ruth Kelly lives in Avon in County Meath. Her picture of a grey seal pup was taken on the Great Saltee Island in County Wexford in September 2020.
The photo I took was of a fluffy white seal pup sitting in front of some dark rocks down on the Saltee Islands. We had headed down for the day last September, myself and some friends from the Selbridge Camera Club. We met up down in Kilmore Quay. That was a few days just before the countywide lockdown. We headed out to Great Saltee Islands. I usually try and head out a couple of times a year with the club. It's an amazing spot for photography, for birds and the seals, and later in the year as well. The photo that I took, I'd been sitting kind of watching some seals. This one in particular was playing with some seaweed for a while by himself, and then he spotted me and kind of curiously shuffled over towards me, so it let me take this picture that I entered where he was looking straight into the camera, which was nice.
Marcin Kaczmarkiewicz lives in Bagnalls Town in County Carlow. His photograph of his cygnet swan was taken on the River Barrow.
The picture of the swan was taken on the Barrow River in the lockdown in May, as far as I remember. It was a really beautiful day, and usually actually in that place I'm photographing kingfishers. But as the family of swans appeared on the river, I wanted to take advantage of taking pictures of the cygnets. So I've decided to move into the water. When I got into the river, I tried to shot all the beauties of the last rays of the sunshine against the signet in this time, with all the reeds around and all the insects around, just showing the beauty of the Barrow River and also the wildlife around there.
Larry Doherty lives in Thurlaston, County Tipperary. His picture is of an orange ladybird.
Well, I'm a macro photographer anyway. I do a lot of insect macro photography, and I go to the Keppel wetlands a lot. So it was just a typical day for me, so searching for insects. So I went to the Keppel wetlands searching for stuff, and I came upon a small beech tree, and there was a ladybird, an orange ladybird, in between two branches, kind of breaking off on each other. So I said, I get the macro camera out and take a picture. It's an orange ladybird. They're about 5 millimetres to 6 millimetres long. They have roughly 16 white spots, and they have translucent edges to their wing cases and the pronotum. If you get close to them, you see the eyes. Just over the eyes, it's like a transparent shield, nearly. They live on trees, mainly sycamore, but I found them on birch. A bit harder to find than the most common seven spot, which still easy enough, but you know where to look.
Adele Cunningham lives in Castleknock in Dublin. She took a picture of a fallow deer buck.
I remember it was a beautiful, misty morning. I was taking a walk in the Phoenix Park. It was a lovely, misty morning in October when I noticed beautiful sun rays shining down through the canopy of the trees. So when I went closer, that's when I seen a deer standing underneath. I had my Sony A7 III with long lens because I like to keep a distance from the deer so not to make them anxious. I've always loved photography. I suppose it's probably the last 3.5 years that I've been able to do a little bit more, though I am limited as I work full time and I have a young family. But when I can, I really enjoy getting outdoors, just me and the camera. And I was lucky to capture that shot.
James Crombie from Ballycommon in County Offaly captured a wonderful image of a starling murmuration.
I'm a massive fan of starling murmurations, especially as a photographer, because you're not actually sure what you're going to get from them. You can't direct them, you can't tell them what to do. You can pick your location, your background, your foreground, and hope they show up some nights to the far side of the lake. That picture was taken at Loch Ennell. It's a place I've spent a lot of this winter visiting, trying to photograph them and trying to track and try to figure out where they'd be. There was a big bunch came in and they were about to join the bigger bunch, but they actually just jammed on the brakes over a tree and they formed what appeared to be, it looks like the foliage of an old rotten tree. So it made it a real special image.
Paul Featherstonhawk lives in Mount Rath in County Leash. His photo is of a jay and a red squirrel.
How I got the photo is I was photographing red squirrels prior to Christmas, and in the last month some jays started to turn up. Now in that picture you'll probably see a jay on the top of what is an old decayed tree stump. That is one of the features of the photo, but also to the bottom of the photograph is a squirrel who's looking up at the jay as if to say, well, where did you come from? Can I just say that a jay is a member of the crow family? He's got a light magenta plumage with some white, black and distinctive blue bar on his wings, or her wings indeed. And they are shy birds and they will fly away at the drop of a hat. But I was lucky on this day. The jay landed on top of the decayed post, which you see in your photograph. And there, lo and behold, is Mr. Red Squirrel looking up at the jay. And that's really how the photo was taken. And it was just one of those wonderful captures that one gets from time to time in the realms of wildlife photography.
So they were the first 6 of our 12 finalists in the inaugural RTE Eye on Nature Wildlife Photographic Competition at the National Botanic Gardens. Are you ready to meet the next half dozen? You are! Good! Tristan Bain lives in Ravenhill, Belfast, County Antrim. His photo of a fox cub on logs was taken in his back garden in July 2020.
It's a portrait of a fox cub, maybe 3 months old, certainly not much older than that. And he is on his hind paws, holding himself up on some poplar logs that are just behind my house. and he's staring down at the viewer with big bright eyes, and there's a glint in the eyes, you know, it's a hint of that youthful curiosity you see in young cubs. And it's one of thousands of photographs I took of these cubs last year over the spring, the summer and the autumn. It was sort of like a silver lining to lockdown for me. I was working from home and I looked out my office window and happened to see two foxes in the daylight, which I'd never seen before. Probably wouldn't have if I wasn't working from home. And that started 6 months of me sitting on an upturned bucket at the bottom of my garden, waiting endlessly. I don't know how many hundreds of hours I spent down there waiting for the foxes to appear. 95% of the time they didn't. And then that remaining five, I would spend most of my time maybe watching them, not taking photographs. And then whenever I had the opportunity to do so, they came close enough or I thought it might make for a nice photograph, I would take a picture. And I don't know how many I've taken over that time, but I kept about 2,000. So I ended up choosing a photograph that my wife particularly liked. And that's the one you see now.
Philip Greaves lives in Clonmel in County Tipperary, and his picture is of a leafcutter bee.
The picture I've sent in is of a leafcutter bee, and this was taken in May last year, and it's actually carrying a leaf to line the cell of the bee hotel. The picture was taken in a bee hotel which is erected in my garden that I made out of an old robin's nest. It was taken probably about 11 o'clock in the morning, and it was taken with a Nikon D7100 DSLR camera and a Sigma 105 macro lens, which I purchased specially for taking these sort of shots during the summer because of the COVID restrictions and not being able to travel anywhere. I noticed the bees in the garden in 2019 and took an interest in them and decided to read up on them. It became sort of a hobby to see if I could get a decent photo, and after many, many hundreds of shots, I eventually arrived with this one.
Andrew Yates from Navan and County Meath took a photograph of kingfishers mating on the River Boyne.
I took the picture of the kingfishers on the River Boyne in Navan, County Meath here. I spotted a kingfisher the night before, and I said I'll chance my arm and go back down the following day. And I set up a small little camouflage tent and sat there for hours upon hours and was taking a few pictures of the female kingfisher was there. And basically the male just showed up out of nowhere and they started kind of talking to each other, I suppose. And suddenly the male just flew up and hovered over the female and started mating, which is an incredibly rare experience to actually witness. Just incredible. So I just fired off a load of shots, and the picture that I chose to send in was when the male had its wings upright and on top of the female's back, and just it was a nice overcast kind of day, so there was black kind of colours. You can see the vibrancy of the kingfishers are just that really bright orange and blue, and it's just an amazing experience.
Johnny Mitchell from Rathlin Island took a photograph of a hare in long grass.
In the middle of June, me and my friend Tom were taking a walk along the cliffs to take pictures of foamers, but there was an awful wind, so we decided to head back to the cars. And as we're heading back to the cars, we're walking through like knee-high grass, and the wind was blowing into our faces, and this hare happened to pop up out of the grass about 10 feet away. Hares have really good hearing, but they've got bad eyesight. So when the hare popped up, me and Tom both dropped to the ground. I got up my camera, locked onto the lay of the hare, took a few shots of his head just appearing above the wavy grass. It ran about 3 or 4 feet. I took another few shots, and then it just disappeared into the background. It was just one of those magical experiences, to be honest. It's pure luck, but you had to have all the camera settings right. I use a Nikon D850 with a 2-500mm lens, and that was it, really.
Grab your coat and get your hair. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street.
Fergal Quinn's photograph of a barn owl was taken in Ballyfin in County Leash in December 2020.
It's a nighttime shot of a barn owl taken off from a moss-covered log of wood. The owl has its wings extended upwards, so what you're seeing basically is the underside of the owl's wings. It was taken in a hide, in Irish photography hides down in Ballyfin, County Laois. The hide is used usually for photographing pine martens, squirrels and birds during the day, but I spent quite a few nights, over a year, planning the shot and eventually got the shot that I entered into the competition on the 19th of December, just before the lockdown. As I said, it took me over a year to get this shot because I had no control over where the bird was going to fly to. It could have flown towards the camera, it could have flown away from the camera, but eventually I got one flying towards the camera.
And finally, Tom McDonnell captured the Mad March Hares boxing on Rathlin Island.
During the pandemic last year, Rathlin had no tourism whatsoever. It was so quiet, you could hear a pin drop, which was good for a person like me as a wildlife photographer and totally into the nature and stuff. It seemed to be that wildlife was a lot more intense. But anyway, I was always out in the early in the mornings, first light, trying to get a decent picture of the hares that they were doing their thing and backlit, the lovely sunrises and stuff. Anyway, done my usual. It was 1st of June 2020. Spotted two hares in the field. It was about 5:30 in the morning and the light just started to break over a hill. I watched the two hares and all of a sudden, boom, the two of them started sparring with each other or dancing around each other, the way I seen it anyway. About 5 seconds, fired off a lot of shots, and that was it. The thing was over, and I was pleased with the results of what I got, and that's how I produced that picture. On the sunny side of the street.
On the sunny side of the street. If you'd like to see those photographs, just visit the website rte.ie/eyeonnature, or if it's easier, go to the Mooney Goes Wild website instead. Now let's move on. Seachtain na Gaeilge is the annual International Irish Language Festival and one of the biggest celebrations of our native language and culture, running this year from March 1st to 17th. That's Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day, the day we'll announce the winner of our Eye on Nature competition. And it's also appropriate that our next item explores wildlife os Gaeilge. Cuacht an Nádúr, The Power of Nature, is a two-part documentary for TG Cathair that looks at the solace nature has offered during this pandemic. Presenter Darragh O'Murricu is an environmental educator, and in it, he visits some of Ireland's most wondrous nature locations, including Malin Head, the Blaskets, Glendalough, and Garnish Island, to capture these locations during a near total absence of visitors and see how wildlife has fared. He spoke earlier with Éanna Ní Leabhar.
Díogat, Darragh, conas tá tú féin, wilt tú go mai?
Tom go mai, Éanna, gur maith agat.
Tá an clár seo ínta deas ar fad. I have to congratulate you on this wonderful set of programmes, I think there are going to be two, in fact, that's coming out shortly on TG Cathair. And it's a great idea. It's actually the impact on our various important visitor sites on the wildlife there. Nuairneach will díine ar bí ag tóirt cuairt orta. So it must have been great fun to make, was it?
Yeah, it was, yes, because, I mean, I filmed most of it during the lockdown and I had the privilege to go around to these beautiful sites during the lockdown when most people were stuck within their 2 or 5 kilometres, and I pretty much had a lot of them to myself, you know, so that was an absolute joy and pleasure to have, and it was great fun to be out in it, and, you know, the weather was beautiful as well, and it was just so peaceful. So yeah, I was really, really fortunate.
Tomage, we glass in it, Fab Lean. Did you do this programme last summer when we were only locked down for a few months? Cain Uair Sa Bhliain ar Innitú an rud?
So yeah, Hosnímer Timpul Mí Bialtaine, so May, an Bhliain Seachaite, agus an Sun, Lanimer Rai, Tríd an Sara, agus Dáthraigh Cúinstí a Rithin Ama Sun mar Bhualaigh na Sriante. The lockdown was kind of lifted, so during the filming, so that gave a great comparison between when the lockdown was in full mode in May and then the comparison in, say, August and September when it was lifted a bit. and then Humer Rasharishas Rinamer Rint Tafa de Ri Mina Nolug and Son. We did the final bit in December. So yeah, it was over a range of different conditions and times of the lockdown.
It was interesting to observe the fact that the impact of visitors and footfall, that this has can have a huge effect on particular species. And you have a very fine set of shots of the eggs of the terns, which are laid on the beach, and they look exactly like stones. Agastashe on the jacker, shul on shin, gan shul out her shoes. Och nildini ek shul on marni lane curtori on. So the birds were able to have their eggs untrodden by people. Now, do people have such an impact, or are the terns subject to being attacked by things like gulls and foxes and things regardless of people? And indeed, would there be more of those when there's no people to keep them away? Because you're the waru will free shin.
Tá an a cheart gotan son, bhí dáthara ag an díonach lásáil ar species fí le. The lockdown had positive impact for certain species, and potentially one of those species was the little tern on Garrog Biog. Agus mar luish tá sé an curfuí Kilcool and sin a Kilvantain, like Kilcool on the beach, on the shingle beach in County Wicklow. They had a bumper year this year. There were at least roughly around half the Irish population on that patch in Kilcool. And as you mentioned, people can have a negative impact on the nesting there, on the success, because the eggs, they're impossible to notice because they're so well camouflaged on the beach. So you could inadvertently walk on them. And they got a break from people last summer. And you could argue then that, well, if there weren't people around, then there weren't people to frighten off the scavengers and the predators. However, again, Siavshin v. Serani, they had volunteers to look after the nests, I think pretty much 24 hours a day. In fact, overall, that site and that species did benefit from the lockdown because there weren't many people there at all in general, and they had volunteers looking after the nest sites, trying to, you know, frighten off the predators, the fox or the crows or certain gulls that might predate on them. So I think the picture was good for them this year.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, the same thing happened on the same little tern species site in Baltray in County Louth. They had a good year as well, too. So obviously it wasn't a one-off just for Kilcool. But we see into Jasper have faken their park Kilmonton, the Wicklow National Park down there around Glendalough, and you have some lovely footage of the warden there of herself coming down the ropes and putting the rings on the birds of prey. Tell us about that, and that really was a success thanks to no people.
Yes, Anne Fitzpatrick, she's some woman. She's an amazing ranger. She does great work down there in Wicklow, in the national park. Mlíana vishi just cur clibana na falcon gurm, the peregrine falcon, and she was delighted with the lockdown from that perspective. Obviously, you know, the usual sayings apply to the lockdown, that it's in general been terrible and it's had a negative impact on a lot of people, but the peregrine falcon did benefit. There were more nest sites, more nesting happening, and in places that you'd rarely see a nest site, because usually those places would be very busy with people. Like Glendalough is the honeypot site, being tagging a sluit and sluit to Glendalough. Gacht Hamdan Blian, Gacht Laudan Shachtan, being North Dovladina, is coming King to Hamdan Blian. So Hog She Shin Desh. An all the not sun, August desh, the na falcon, nadine of August Dairig Logama, Mlina Tushk and Aspadina. So, we an on a horse dogs gone out stock with na hain lahain sauce. So, it's scale that scale of being sun chama.
I happen to go with Foibon. Do you think that actually there is a mismatch between tourism and wildlife? there's the thing now about Skellig Island. When I was young, me and Finn McCool, anyone could go to Skellig if the weather was good and you got a boatman to take you out. Neil Cathaga Gullin Shachan Shin Anish Munawil Ticket Ogot, so you have to have a booking. There has to be a limit of people allowed so that the nesting birds can happen. Do you think that now, as a result of your work on these programmes and seeing the impact of the lack of crowds on wildlife, and given that our wildlife isn't exactly jumping out of its skin in Ireland, it needs all the help it can get, should something be taken from this work you have done, Captain Two? Maybe Cusco Curran Mage Dini at all Gullamaka Fakenter Navadi Shaw?
Sha is kished on a yakarishin on a local. It's a very delicate question to answer, and I suppose we did learn that possibly there is a mismatch or some sort of disconnect between the goals of tourism and you know, wildlife and letting, you know, biodiversity thrive. And I guess we could point the finger at certain areas. I don't know if it's helpful to do that. So, for example, mass tourism, you'd question the impact that has versus the actual interaction or the benefit people actually get on their trip or their visit or whatever. So maybe we should be looking at more in-depth activities in tourism. So rather than bring people in just so they can take a selfie, bring people into places where the people are genuinely interested and want to find out or see a certain species or be in a certain place, not just to take the selfies, just they're there for the experience because they're engaged or they're really interested in whatever they're going to, rather than just having it as an entertainment and a social media result, you know, that you can post your photo up there. So we should really examine that for ourselves. And, you know, with that comes examining the benefit of these places, not just in monetary terms. So we're doing that a lot with most of our habitats and special places in Ireland, especially when it comes to farming. We're just looking at the economic benefit and what can we extract out of these places. And in tourism terms, it's the same thing. We're looking at how many people can we get in there, how many bed nights, how many tour buses can we squeeze through, how much money can we make off them on the boats. We should look at it in a holistic view, look at habitats and biodiversity in a holistic view, and look at all the other benefits that accrue from them, and not just the benefits that accrue for us humans, benefit for nature itself. You know, it has its own intrinsic value. It deserves to be there for its own sake, you know. So, you know, looking at something beyond us humans. So it's hard for us to do that, and it's hard with the way the economic system is set up at the moment, is that we're all about trying to make as much money, grow the economy as much as possible, extract as much value in monetary terms out of everything. And I'm not sure if that's really serving us well in the long term. It's definitely giving us short-term wealth. But in the long run, we're really messing things up, and we're looking at down the end of a barrel here. We're looking at destroying the very thing that supports us. And I guess that's the case with a lot of tourism locations, that by the very fact that they've become popular, you risk killing the goose that laid the golden egg. So it's a complex and often a heated discussion, or it's not that easy.
So beidh go jockey rod egan why amaka san trud chocolair. Now to go Clara ka janta agus agus beishid le foil air TG Cahir inish doing cain ur cain am a ve majabal to ida eskens.
Sha, well big and dach Clara shul calmaka air on carolas fed the vi vorta capim larchine tronona agus an son an caon an cicanella shachtan iasin air an trochohéine lá de morta. Rishig and Tam Kiana at Archine Tronona. So 24th of March and 31st of March, 9:30 in the evening. And they're roughly there to coincide with the 1 year anniversary of the lockdown. So that was the idea. And we were thinking when we first started, you know, the idea came up for the program and we started filming it. We thought by the time this goes out, all this business will be forgotten about and we'll be over it. But that hasn't come to pass. So we're still very much in it. So it's got a different slant now to what we originally imagined it might be.
agus is féidir le gach sinna féchan déir agus is commonmna bhfuil gailge agus mar tá sé scrífa i méle faoi gachród, so it's all subtitled, and if you don't have enough leafhacht in the Irish language, you can certainly enjoy every single bit of it because it's so well shot, the film, the actual pictures, and indeed, in fact, some of the people on the programme are speaking in English too. So tá sí ínta mai her father's féidir rudhí a chlisins in Gaelge a Merle is féidir le náit ná dúrtha a eiscint I gáit agus tána hanavíha an a mai comai. So you really did a great job on this, Derek. I'm sure you're very proud of it.
Yes, the programme is just tá sé glóite go hálan her fad tá sé you know, to go on to go fechan there in the sieve and the shower fathers on a pittery duchretta, like bew fechan there just on a pittery, ni god of eish, le cotta le raw gumsel and the indinella, a kinta ta na fohid land, the subtitles are there in English, so take it to anachidó agus is bailach dá sé chun cúpla focail aolam mar cíú tú na fóthidil os bead agus cloisin tú an caint os gaolan tá anachidín ar an glóir bhfuil gwan caint lo os bead so tícha sé bheith sin agus ó théamh an chlór de tom brodal os an chlór ach is port anna bheag a bhí gomsa ann i gompra leis an méid aibre rinne gach den eile an fear camera an siúrthóir na léirthóirí ar fád an agrathóir you know tá ní mise an aig atá tacht an cín ach tá neirtin aibre a héan ar siúl té fír dó ar fad so tá buíochas ach gachtain a bhí páirteachs chlór.
Yes, indeed, as they keep telling us, we're all in this together, and you were all in that together as well. As indeed, Derek, we're all in this together on our programme.
Sin cár déanna.
Gurmina Magadena, thanks Derek.
Yeah, no, brava, kind lad. Slán in it.
Slán.
Best of luck with it, bye-bye. More details on the website rte.ie/Mooney. Now, I want to go back to Niall Hatch very quickly before we end. Niall is still at his home in Greystones in County Wicklow. Niall, I was at Photo Wildlife Park the other day and I noticed a rook doing something rather unusual. Well, for me, anyway, I was sitting in the car outside the main entrance and this rook walked by in a kind of knowing way, keeping one eye on me, you know, the whole time, the way they do, very clever birds. And it went up to a tree and it seemed to be sharpening its beak, akin to kind of sharpening a knife. That was the kind of action against the bark. And when it left, I got out of the car and went over, and I realised it was actually taking moss off the tree. And I assume it was going to bring it back to the nest for layering.
That's absolutely right, Derek. And they are indeed very clever guys and girls. Rooks, of course, are members of the crow family, and they are very smart. When birds build their nests, most nests are rigid structures made of sticks and twigs sort of woven together. And that's you know, that's good and secure and strong and protects them from the elements. But when they lay their eggs in there, it's not very good at insulating them. It's not good for keeping things soft, making sure they don't get damaged or cracked. So by lining the inside of their nest with things like moss or with some other species, they use feathers, and some birds, like the thrushes, use mud to do that. It's about improving the insulation inside the nest and giving that soft cushion for the eggs and for the chicks when they hatch out. So that's what it was doing. And they're very opportunist, so they'll take advantage of whatever materials are available. That's part of their adaptability and their intelligence. There's some other birds which are, you know, I suppose there's less choice there. They just are on instinct and through their genes, you know, they don't much thought goes into it. They just pick the materials that they know will work. So there are actually some birds like the long-tailed tit, which actually builds most of its nest from moss. It's not a rigid nest at all. It's a very flexible structure with a sort of a dome shape, a bit like a small rugby ball, that's actually all bound together with spider web, and that's really soft and flexible, and it's a real I think marvel of natural engineering to see them doing that. There's other species that like, as I mentioned, the song thrushes, they like to use mud to line the inside of their nests because that's just what they've evolved to do, and that of course will go quite hard and will make sure that it's nice and insulated, and that means that the cold air isn't coming up from below. When it comes to birds like rooks, they'll take whatever's available. So if there happened to be sheep around, they would take sheep wool. I know that some people who have dogs and the dogs are shedding, what they do is they actually put some of that dog
hair, yeah,
outside, and you'll see the birds using that for lining their nests. So they're very resourceful, these birds, and they'll do what they can to make sure that they're successful.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Niall. That's all we have time for today. Don't forget, you can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. We will be announcing the winner of the RTE Eye on Nature competition on Wednesday during the Today Show on RTÉ One Television. So tune in for that. Good luck to our 12 finalists. Visit the gallery online. Details on our website if you want to have a look at the top 12 photographs. Thanks to the entire team who work on the programme every week, our broadcast coordinator, Jarlath Holland, and in particular to John Bell O'Reilly for his help during the course of this competition. A massive amount of work. So well done to you, John, and indeed to the team at the Today Show in RTÉ Cork. Until Wednesday on the Today Show, when we announce the winner, bye-bye.
Mooney Goes Wild was presented and produced by Derek Mooney.